right. Two Guys in the Podcast returned for the second edition. Greg Doyle, what's going on?
I got to know, how many cigarettes do you have to smoke in your young lifetime to get a voice that kind of has that sound effect that you have? I don't have it.
Everybody expects me to be like huskier whenever they see me. A lot, actually. A lot of cigarettes.
Are you serious? Are you a smoker? Am I doing a podcast with a smoker?
Yeah, I mean, you have to have one guy who smokes to get the deep, husky voice.
That's true, and I'll be the guy that just looks really good on the beach because
exactly.
We've got a podcast graphic or something that has both your face and my face, and thankfully it blocks more than half of both of our faces.
I know,
not our good side.
Well, that wasn't exactly what I was requesting for the graphics department, but I like it. I like it a lot. Anyway, the news of the day is that Randy Moss is done. And it came. I saw it over the phone. It comes as a surprise, I think, because with the way that he came back in 2010, everybody kind of expected him to keep on trucking on with at least one more, you know, different team. He's, you know, for a guy who has put up such prolific numbers, he's really bounced around the league, you know.
Yeah, and I think he's. I don't think he's done. I think maybe his feelings are hurt right now. Is my guess. Is he's seeing money thrown around at Plaxico Burress and San Antonio Holmes. And he's not getting that money thrown at him, and so he's going to take his ball and go home. But we've not seen the last Randy Moss. We might not see him again until about November. And do you know what the rules are? I mean, specifically, can you kind of does he have to announce retirement? And if he does that mean he cannot play at all in 2011?
If he files retirement papers with the league, but I don't think that he's. I feel like there's, you know, like you could basically say I'm retiring, and then not retire and take your time before you file. If he files papers with the league, he's actually retired, and then he'll have to file papers again to unretire. So sort of like Brett Favre did, but like Edgerrin James, for instance, somebody recently found him on a sideline where he was like coaching a high school football game. They're like, so what are your plans for 2011? He's like, I retired months ago.
I still did a couple words there. You said someone just found Edgerrin James on a side. I heard the word side and thought, don't tell me he's on a sidewalk. down in Naples with a 40 and a putt. But no, you're saying he's coaching high school football. Good for him. It's pretty impressive, really. A guy making some money, giving back to the community. I won't see Randy Moss giving back squad, but I think in November, even if it's not his plan, he might literally think he's retired. And I can see in November some team is – you know, 8-5, and they're clearly going to the postseason, but they're not sure they have enough to go all the way. He's going to say to himself, I want that ring. I'll join your team, sure.
Yeah, and that was that team last year. Well, that wasn't necessarily supposed to be the Titans. The Titans were the Vikings and the Titans were both kind of using him as a way to vault their offense into like a better, a better place than it was. Obviously, that didn't work out. One spot that sticks out to me that I think is interesting, that if they're not signing him, I am concerned, is the St. Louis Rams, because they have Sam Bradford, who's a very good quarterback, albeit young. They have a good offensive line. They have Josh McDaniels, who's familiar with Randy Moss, running the offense this year, but they don't have any wide receivers. They just signed Mike Sims-Walker to a one-year deal before the weekend started, and to me, that seems like a perfect fit. You know, he knows the offensive coordinator. He's got a good young quarterback with a big arm and really good accuracy on deep balls, and an offensive line that should allow this team to be kind of prolific, at least, you know, or at least score some points. So I don't understand how he doesn't fit there.
I'll tell you how he doesn't fit there. The words St. Louis Rams. I realize they won seven games last year, so it's not like they're 3-13 or anything. But still, if I'm Randy Moss, and I'm just not dumb enough to be Randy Moss, but if I'm Randy Moss, I'm thinking I'm not playing for a team that could very well go 6-10, unless they're going to throw just a ton of money at him.
Right.
His numbers dropped off last year so much. He had 3 straight 1,000-yard receiving seasons, and then last year just fell off a cliff. So I can see him playing for the Rams, but only if in November they're 8-5 and they ask nicely. I can, you know, right now going to the Rams, he already had a long year last year. I don't know if he wants another one of those.
I mean, do you think he's doing something where he just wants to avoid training camp? I mean, is that that doesn't make any sense if you're Randy Moss, I don't think. But I mean, what about the Jets? Why aren't the Jets were supposed to be interested in him. I mean, he kind of makes sense for them. They'd take anybody.
Well, they've already got Plaxico. They've already got their knucklehead factor, and the Patriots got their knucklehead in Ocho Cinco. So he's just waiting to see. And the Bengals, you know, are so bad that I'm sure they're calling Randy Moss right now. The Bengals being the Bengals, I'm sure they're calling him. Oh, you're retired? So we can now get you real cheap. Now we'll call you, says Mike Brown. But no, for whatever reason, I kind of think he is done. What I'm guessing, the fact that it happened now and not during the lockout, not even the first day or two after the lockout, tells me he got his little bitty feelings hurt that he wasn't getting the money shown to him that he thought he deserves. Doesn't want to come to the reality that I'm going to get paid like third or fourth receiver, so he's going to take his ball and be done. But in November, when he's had that first taste of no attention for 3 months, because this is a guy that likes attention. I mean, he doesn't do it like Ochocinco, but this is a guy that, you know, you don't moon the crowd in Green Bay unless you like attention. He likes attention. In November, he'll be starving for it.
No, he does like attention, and he has gotten our attention for many a year. You know, the thing to me, and maybe you're right, is that is it possible that his agent called around to different teams who will be contenders in 2011, found out that none of them are interested in him, and then kind of moved on from there. To me, the surprising thing is that the Jets would prefer Plaxico to Randy. I feel like
that doesn't surprise me at all. Actually, I can see Plaxico being exceptionally good. I know he's, I don't know, I don't have it in front of me, but he's got to be 4 or 5 years younger than Moss. Got to be. And his last year, he didn't put any mileage on the tires. He didn't do anything, assuming the gunshot wound didn't take too much out of him. And I'm being serious about that. But otherwise, look, Michael Vick took 2 years off playing a premium position, and last year was the best Michael Vick we've ever seen. Plaxico's got a lot left to give, and Moss did hit that ceiling last year. I don't even know what happened, but last year, you look at his numbers, I mean, he had 3 straight years of being great, and that follows a 12-year career of being great. And then last year, it wasn't like, yeah, he dipped a little bit. This is a guy that goes from hitting 45 home runs a year to he hit 7 last year. Crazy.
Yeah, no, it's insane. I believe Plaxico is going to be the same age as Randy Moss in a few days.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
See, this is why I'm good at my job, though, because I've got a firm grasp on facts. Plaxico and Moss are the same age?
Plaxico will turn 34 on August 12th.
And Moss is 34?
Moss is 34 now, yeah. It's crazy.
Oh, you're hurting my feelings. Yeah, you're hurting my feelings. You know, and Moss has – not. Now I'm going to reestablish my dominance with numbers. Moss has –
I had to. In fairness, I went to Wikipedia really fast.
I was thinking to myself, it was a long time ago that Burris was at, I guess it was Michigan State or something. I mean, it has been a long time, but for whatever reason, he just doesn't. It seems like he's been getting better in the last couple of years, and obviously not shooting himself wasn't better, but he's just finally become a dominant receiver in the last 3 or 4 years, whereas Moss has been kind of sliding down a little bit. But Moss has 954 catches. And I don't know how much of a milestone guy he is, but he's already eighth all time. But, you know, 1,000 catches is right there. I mean, that's such a big round number. That's like a home run hitter retiring with 484 home runs. I mean, if no one will take you, okay. But if you're 16 away, you got to go for 500.
Yeah, and what about this? Is he a first ballot Hall of Famer?
Well, talent-wise, numbers-wise, absolutely. But Hall of Fame voters, first of all, it's hard to pick the Hall of Fame ballot and narrow yourself, limit yourself to a certain number, because something about the NFL, I don't know if it's because they do a better job making giants out of people than any other league, or we just love the NFL more, or whatever. But I've written the story a time or two, looking at the Hall of Fame ballot, going, I don't know how do you get this list of 50 Titans down to 6? Because you could argue that every one of these finalists is superb, so there will always be competition. But he's top 8. All time, well, he's number 8 in receptions, number 5 in yards, and number 2 in receiving touchdowns. First ballot Hall of Famer, but there's going to be, A, a lot of competition, and, B, because voters are kind of stodgy and a little bit on the yucky side, I can see them holding out for a year or two. We're going to make Randy Moss pay a little bit.
Yeah, and he's second all time in 100-yard games. I like how you had those. See, you do have dominance numbers. I like how you had those ready right in front of you.
Well, here's why. And
I'm also watching the television. It's okay.
Well, I want you to know that I'm not looking at profootballreference.com/players/. I'm not looking there. But actually, I knew those numbers because I tweeted that out about 2 hours ago, and I saw Moss retiring. I just wanted, you know, let people know here's where he rates all time. And all time, you could argue
it's him and Jerry Rice, right?
Yeah, the confluence of numbers. That Jerry Rice is the only receiver with a better resume than this guy.
Yeah, and one other interesting factor, and I'll cop to stealing this off of Twitter too, so I don't know this, but I saw that I believe it's 0.762 touchdowns per game for Moss, which is outrageous because and that's the highest all time, higher than Rice, higher than Carter, higher than anyone else. He has in terms of how many games he's played in and how many touchdowns he has, he's got the highest number of touchdown, you know, average touchdown per game. And I don't know how you can really measure that. Maybe when we talk about the Plaxico thing, to me, one thing that there's a difference is Randy was always a vertical throw your hand in the air once he gets separation and let the quarterback chunk it deep. Plaxico is maybe more of an end zone target, and that works well for the Jets, or like a, you know, move the chains type of guy. Is that, I assume that's the difference.
Well, there's that, and there's also that Moss is, in the last couple of years, even as he was getting 1,000-yard seasons, he was becoming more and more of a decoy and less of a guy that you're actually getting production out of.
Sure.
And, of course, last year that totally bottomed out. Whereas Burris is a guy that he's not much of a decoy, really. I mean, there's no threat of him running the 40 and 4-2. But he's just a guy that moves the chains consistently, as opposed to Moss lets other people move the chains. And I think if you're going to pay a lot of money for somebody, maybe you want to pay a lot of money for a guy that's going to move the chains himself.
Yeah, now that you've listed these numbers, though, the thing that is boggling, I mean, he's not that far away from 15,000 yards and 1,000 catches. I mean, I don't care who you are. If you're an NFL blogger, you still want to know that you wrote so many words, or, you know, at least I look at my traffic, you know, we check our stats. Everybody checks their stats and checks where they stand relative to other people. You know, like you comparing your Twitter feed to Jay Billis, right?
Yeah, but I try not to. I try to pick people that I can actually beat on Twitter. So, and I haven't even looked in a while, so I could be wrong about this. But for a while there, I was ahead of Mark Schlereth's daughter. And, you know, as long as I can beat out an ESPN football analyst's daughter, then I feel like I've done something on Twitter. But that, I tell you, that is the power of ESPN right there. When Mark Schlereth's daughter has 5 or 10 or 15,000, whatever. Go find that while we're talking, or maybe I will. But it was a crazy, depressing number that make you realize, wow, ESPN really is the tail that wags this really big dog.
Well, and you know what was crazy was Pete Prisco was talking about how John Clayton had just joined Twitter, and he's like, yeah, I'm ahead of the professor right now. Well, that was like 48 hours ago, and now John Clayton has like 160,000 followers.
Yeah, you know, Billis, there was some sort of a record set, or I don't know. I remember seeing this, that Billis got to 100,000 faster than almost anybody. And he didn't do as fast as Clayton. Clayton got there in about 3 days.
Yeah.
And I was one of the three. And in fact, somebody had retweeted a Clayton scoop of some sort. And I went and clicked on Clayton's page, just wanted to see how busy this guy had been. And I realized, oh, he just signed up last night, because at that point he had like 9 tweets. And, you know, ESPN lately has been big stress. They're going to make an entree into Twitter bigger than they ever have and really become a presence. And I'm guessing he was told, look, you've got to tweet. And how about that? How about a guy capable of getting 150,000 followers in a week, just never tweeted because it couldn't be bothered to do it, didn't
right.
want to do it, and that's how big he is. And that he got that many. And Adam Schefter, look, Adam Schefter had, and this is off the top of my head, but I'm going to be more right about this than I was about Randy Moss's age compared to Plaxico Burress. Schefter had about 150,000 followers 2 weeks ago. And today he's 800 million.
No,
I don't know.
Was it that low? He's at like 800,000 now, I'm sure. I mean, that's, yeah, I mean, it's a, you know, they do. I think that Clayton has done a good job. It's always interesting to see, you know, some of these guys come in and see whether they can do a good job with Twitter. Billis and Clayton are both good. Billis is one of the most entertaining tweeters out there. I mean, behind you, of course. But
No. Billis is much better, and yeah. he's amazingly funny.
Yeah.
But that guy's, I mean, he's exceptionally smart. He was a lawyer, or maybe still is a lawyer.
He still is a lawyer.
Yeah, very smart guy, and humor is all about intelligence a lot. What I like about the way Clayton does is Clayton's humble about it. Now, I don't know if he's humble in real life. I have no idea, but at the end of the night, he'll sign off and basically almost apologize. I'm sorry, I'm going to go to bed now, but thank you for following me today or something. He's very, very humble, and you don't really get like an Adam Schefter tweet. You'll never see any humbleness about that guy.
Yeah, yeah.
He's good at what he does, and you know, pretty good, pretty handsome guy. I don't mind saying that myself. Although I could post him up on the basketball court, and I'm 5'10". But
Yeah, I could too.
But there's nothing humble about that guy. No, I mean, nothing humble about that guy. And Clayton at least pretends to not think he's all that, and I like that.
Yeah, no, he's good. All right, let's while we're talking about the free agent or NFL and Randy Moss retiring, the rest of the free agency, I'm sure you watched. I was telling the I was on a radio spot earlier, and they asked me what I thought about the Nnamdi Asamoah sweepstakes, and I said it was like watching. It was the rare moment in sports reporting where it was like watching The Usual Suspects, and like all of a sudden this thing happened that nobody was expecting, and he went to the Eagles when, you know, all along it was the Jets and the Cowboys, but there was this really cool like 10 minutes where the Jets were out of the race and then the Cowboys were out of the race, and everybody was like, wait, who's the mystery team? And people were just throwing out names and nobody knew, and finally he was going to the Eagles. What do you think about what Philly's doing right now?
Well, first of all, that was a Twitter moment of Dewey beating Truman. And for everybody who doesn't know what I'm talking about, and that would be pretty much everybody, like the Chicago Tribune, I think it was, had a headline in 48 or 52 or whatever the year was. Their headline says, Dewey beats Truman for president.
Yeah.
And they jumped the gun, were wrong. Well, that's what everybody was saying about Nnamdi, is that it's going to be this team or that team, the Jets or the Cowboys. Everybody was saying that to the point that you had people going on Twitter saying, I've got sources saying he's going to choose between these two and he's really torn. I mean, if the sources are really saying that, then they were flat out lying to people.
Yep.
Because Nnamdi was not choosing between those two. And it's Twitter, one thing Twitter's done on a negative side, and I love it. The fact is that you keep trying to talk about sports, and I'm trying to talk about Twitter. I do love Twitter, but it's taken a lot of the drama out of stuff. Like, there are very few moments when you go to a website and go to, like, our website or ESPN and click on it, and, oh, there's a headline. Oh, so-and-so picked the Cowboys. Well, on Twitter, you already knew it. It broke on Twitter somewhere. And anyway, this is a rare time that something as important as where's Nnamdi going to go, and there's like drama at the end. It was a very, very weird thing. And you want to talk about the Eagles?
Let's talk about Twitter some more. Twitter's fun. I like Twitter.
Twitter's really well, you, Twitter's, we, well, Twitter's
you,
our friend.
Well, you talk, it is. But you know, you talked about ESPN's going to make this big push on Twitter. You know why? Because they were getting torched by our man Jeff Goodman and Adrian Wojnarowski at Yahoo during the NBA draft, because nobody was watching their televisions. Everybody was watching Twitter, and because these guys are so well connected with not just NBA teams, but you know, Jeff is well connected with these college guys, so he, you know, it's easy to, you know, easily able to get the scoop from these college kids about who just got picked or who just got called. So before ESPN could put a camera on anybody or get back from commercial and announce who was going to be picked, the tweets were going out about who was going to be selected, and it was hilariously boring, if that makes any sense.
That breaks my heart for ESPN, because ESPN has ruined the NFL draft for years, because you're watching the NFL draft, and again, I'm a guy that likes a little bit of drama. I'm about to find out who the Bills pick number 7, so that'll be fun. What I don't need is to wonder who they're going to pick, and all of a sudden have ESPN's cameras show some guy in the crowd answering the phone and smiling. Oh, you just got picked by the Bills.
Yep.
About to find out. You know, I want to hear Roger Goodell say it. I don't want to see a guy smiling on camera. So if ESPN's getting scooped on its own show, breaks my heart, because they've been scooping us during the draft or who's about to get taken, not even inadvertently. They'll just, you know, scan around. They don't even know what they're doing. They're just, there's a blind squirrel finding the nut, and you know, what goes around comes around.
Well, you know, it was really cheesing me off at the NFL draft this year is we're in there on our Saturday, and on Saturday, the NFL draft is the least sexy thing, like in terms of like sporting event sexiness, the least sexy sporting event day of the year, because it's 8 hours and you're just in there like grinding, trying to keep up with who's getting picked. You know, even like the NFL, there's very few NFL guys who know every single person there. You know, Chad Ryder does and Rob Rang do. But I mean, that's it. Like, you know, we're struggling with some of these names, and yet NFL Network has got these guys, has got like the pick up on the screen up in the left-hand corner of Radio City before they're like announcing who the pick is over on the loudspeaker. So they're basically hand delivering it to NFL Network and then they're announcing it, which makes me mad to no end, because I mean, you own the network. I get what you're doing, but still, you know, throw us a bone here.
Yeah. Have some class. So one thing I did not like about CNNSI, if you remember, they had their own version of SportsCenter
about
10 years ago.
Yeah.
Well, they would do it completely different from ESPN. I like the way ESPN does it, so now I'm going to pat them on the back. ESPN would lead to a highlight, you know, and tonight the Padres played the Giants, and here we go. And then the highlight package is unveiled for about 30 seconds. It's almost like a miniature game, and you don't know who wins until the last highlight, and you show, okay, there's a walk-off home run. Okay, here's the drama. But, I, you know, basically that game was played out for me in the course of 1 minute, and I just saw it. Whereas CNNSI would say, tonight the Giants played the Padres, and the Padres won with a walk-off home run. Here's how it happened. And they show the next 30 seconds. Like, I don't care what happened in the third inning. You've already told me what happened in the ninth. It's like, don't tell me the last page of this book and expect me to listen as you recite the first chapter. I'm not listening to that crap.
Right. It's like, I come here for like, I want you to give me a box score in visual form and play it out. Don't tell me they won and then expect me to watch somebody smack a single in the fifth inning. Yeah, I agree.
It's the James Patterson book. James Patterson, don't give me the plot twist at the very end. If you already told me the guy's dead, I don't really care about the third chapter where he's alive and you know, trying to pick up some woman at a bar. He dies five chapters later. That's, I don't care anymore.
Yeah, I concur. So yeah, free agency. We were going there. We could actually just have a Twitter cast, and that'd be fine with me.
I had done some podcasts in the before. I've loved and lost before, but I love you now more than ever. But I've loved and lost. But one time I had Billis as a guest, and he wanted to talk about basketball, and all I wanted to do is talk about his Twitter and just swoon over how smart and funny he is. Because he's, as far as male crushes go, he's high on my list.
He's up there. I don't mind saying it either. He's a good-looking dude, too.
What he does that's really hard to do, and because a lot of guys try, is like Herb Street tries, and nothing against Herb Street, but you, at the end of the day, you know where his allegiance is. You know he's an Ohio State guy, and you can just kind of tell if you listen to him over the course of the year, you know he really, you know, is obsessed with Ohio State, wants them to win and all that, and I don't blame him for that. Billis, unless you knew he was a Duke guy, you could you know, start watching sports tomorrow, pay attention to Billis for an entire year, and at the end of the year, if someone said, okay, pop quiz, what school did Jay Billis play for? You'd never know. You'd never know. And that is...
I think I would guess Columbia or something.
Yeah, exactly.
Like,
well, Duke is the Columbia of the South, isn't that what they say, or the Harvard of the South, or whatever.
Duke's Columbia of the North, I believe. Harvard.
Whatever
the
they are, they've got a coach who doesn't know when you can and cannot talk to recruits, although that is a low blow. I've seen college writers on Twitter, speaking of Twitter, I've seen, you know, Goodman, Parrish, DeCourcy, the Sporting News, trying to make sense of the rule that Coach K either did or did not break by talking to and actually offering a scholarship to Alex Poitras, a really good wing forward.
Right.
And what people, and these are people that really know the sport fairly well, have decided is that rule is such a gray area about when Poitras's AAU team lost a game, they were knocked out of a tournament. Does that mean the tournament's over for them, although it's not technically over? And does that mean that he now can be talked to by a coach? It's a very gray area. So there's a lot of people out there saying the NCAA has to come down hard on Duke and all that. But that's all that is, and I've never been a Duke lover ever. But all that is Duke haters seeing a chance to kick them while they're down, and it doesn't even matter if the facts warrant it.
I actually grew up as a Duke fan, so I'm not that big a Duke hater. I know, like, stunning revelations you're finding out. Well, actually, while we're here, speaking of the ACC, why don't we just talk about this? You know, this is a great. You probably did the segue on purpose. I'm not that clever, even though I'm, you know, this would be host. Carolina just fired their head coach, Butch Davis. I was at a media event earlier today on Monday where there were lots of local people. And everybody is still amazed that it took so freaking long to fire Butch Davis.
Yeah. Well, first of all, about my cleverness, sure, that was a planned segue. I mean, if whatever you say, yeah. That,
whatever works.
In hindsight, that seems to have worked out pretty well, so okay. One thing that I've heard and seen written, but not really seen the two added up together, but so I guess I'll add it up together, is that apparently not the UNC chancellor himself, Holden Thorpe or Tharp or Holden Caulfield, whatever, whoever that guy is, not him, but the overall overseer of the North Carolina state system, which includes North Carolina State and, you know, all the UNC campuses, right. Apparently that board got a new president, like the day Butch Davis was let go.
Yes. All right. So, no. If you could go, it'll probably take you like a month and a half because I tweet a lot, but if you can go back in my timeline, this, so what happened was the Board of Governors got, I think it was 20, now it would be like 35 days ago or something like that. They got a new group in. This was the first time they had met since that new group came in. The prevailing theory, and I say theory because I don't want to accuse the last guy, lest I run into him at, like, you know, around here. But the last guy who was in charge was actually very supportive of Butch. He's a Butch guy. And so when they met for the first time, you know, just like any, you know, like let's say you're a group that audits a company, you come in and you're like, really? Like, look at this. Like, what are you guys doing? You know, what took so long? And yes, that is what happened. This new group met for the first time. And for what I've been told, and I don't want to, you know, say this is dead on accurate, but that they went to Holden Thorpe. And they said, Chancellor, you have to tell Dick Bedore to fire Butch Davis. And so Holden Thorpe went to Dick Bedore and said, Dick, you have to fire Butch Davis. And Dick said, I'm not firing Butch. And so Holden went back and said, he won't fire him. They go, then you got to fire him. And at that point, you know, Holden's fresh on the job. If he doesn't fire Butch, he's fired.
Well, that's look, and if that's the scenario and that makes all the sense in the world, that's what should have happened to Carolina, and that's what should have happened to Tennessee and should still happen at Ohio State.
Right.
And that being that if your coach does something as bad as Bruce Pearl did, as bad as Tressel did, as bad as Butch Davis oversaw, I'm not sure how much he did and just how much he kind of let happen under his watch. It's a little bit different there. But when the program is that bad, you've got to fire that coach. And if the AD won't do it, then if you're the president, you've got to fire the AD. And if the president won't make the AD do it, then Board of Regents, you fire your chancellor, because crap like that runs uphill, and someone's got to put their foot down. Otherwise, you've got all these coaches acting like scumbags or allowing scumbags like John Blake to run amok on their staff, and that whole thing was gross. And North Carolina football is going to take a beating, I would guess, in the future. And if they hire a great coach, then all bets are off. But I don't see a great coach coming in after what they're going to face with NCAA. But unless they hire a great coach and turn it around right away, this timing is going to set them back farther than having fired Butch in December would have set them back. And the same thing is happening at Tennessee basketball. That program, I did some preseason preseason basketball work for Lindy's magazine, and I work with the SEC. And so I am a lot more expert on Tennessee basketball at this moment than I normally would ever pretend to be in August. And I'm telling you, Tennessee's basketball team will win 9 games this year.
Oh,
they're terrible. They're horrible. And that's Bruce Pearl's fault, but it's also the AD's fault for not pushing them out when you should have and securing a good recruiting class that's not going to leave when you fire Pearl in May. So Tennessee basketball in the dumper for a long time, and the same's about to happen to Carolina football. And for that, you don't really blame Butch Davis. You blame the people above him that didn't fire him when they should have.
And I heard a crazy rumor that he tried to resign. I heard that today. And again, crazy rumor. I'm emphasizing how crazy the rumor is. I heard he tried to resign back when, and they're like, no. That aside, the interesting thing is that at this point, these freshmen that are coming in, they got a pretty good recruiting class. These guys are already signed up for classes. They're already on campus. I mean, this is the middle of August, or the beginning of August. You know, these guys are getting ready to start not to be cliche, but what is the best time of their lives? I mean, they're getting ready to be, you know, freshmen in college. And if you're Carolina, do you release them or do you say, nope, you're already here, might as well just come to school? I mean, to me, I would feel hosed if I wasn't given a chance to at least go elsewhere.
Yeah, I don't want to give Carolina enough credit to be shrewdly smart and to wait until now to fire Butch Davis, knowing full well these guys are on campus taking classes and they're just not going to have the gumption to get up and leave, that they're stuck at Carolina. If I thought Carolina was shrewder than this, I would say, wow, that's probably why they waited until late July. They waited to have that Board of Regents meeting you're talking about. They waited to have that so they could have all these recruits stay, because that's one way of making sure you don't fall off the face of the earth, is that Butch Davis's last good recruiting class. And we all kind of know now probably what John Blake was doing to get that recruiting class, that it stays on campus. And it's a shame that those kids came to play for a recruiting coordinator and now a head coach that neither one of them are there, and they're sort of stuck. And yet I've not heard a word about any of them leaving, so maybe they all want to be there. It's a beautiful campus. I can see once you get there, you're like, you know what, I like this place. I'm staying.
But they're worse places to be stuck. One of the interesting things that's coming out about this whole Butch stuff is that So if you, when I say 216 phone numbers, do you know what I'm saying? The Cleveland, he had that private cell phone.
Yeah, I know about that, and I don't really. Some people are saying that the conspiracy theory is they fired him so they wouldn't have to turn over his 216 cell phone records.
Yeah, so like he has this 216 cell phone. It's like when they got, all right, if you're a coach of a big time college football team, you use your cell phone a lot, right? I mean, like a ton.
Oh, yeah.
Well, like his, but his 919 number that they turned over, it's like 8 pages of records or something. And you know, John Blake's is like 90 pages. Well, Butch has this 216 cell phone he's been using, and there is, they hired outside counsel to review the records. North Carolina's never seen the records. Supposedly, as I understand it, the NCAA hadn't seen the records. And now they are leaving it up to Butch Davis as to whether or not he will let them see the records.
Now, this is one of those cases where I clearly don't know the rule book well enough to know what's allowed and what's not allowed. But I can't imagine that if the whole world knows, and the world does know, that Butch Davis has a cell phone that apparently he was using that wasn't property of Carolina but still was the head coach's cell phone.
Right.
And NCAA is all about monitoring phone records and phone calls and all that. I can't see a scenario where the NCAA allows Butch Davis and Carolina to refuse to hand those records over. I mean, and if he refuses, then if you're the NCAA, you tell Carolina, okay, if he refuses, we can't, because they don't have legal jurisdiction.
That's the problem. They have no legal jurisdiction. They can't demand the records.
They can't demand it, but what they can do is for failure to cooperate, because that's part of their,
sure,
their mantras is, yeah, you got to cooperate. If Carolina fails to cooperate, and by extension that means Butch Davis, but if Carolina doesn't cooperate and turn those records over, then NCAA can and should, and I don't know that they will because they're weak, but they can and should say, we will hit you so hard with our rule book and our compliance because you don't give those records. We will. It's almost like if you lose your parking ticket at the airport,
right?
They assume the worst. Okay, then you're going to pay for 2 weeks because if you can't find your parking ticket, we're not going to believe your car's been here for 2 days. We're going to believe, yeah, you've been here for 2 weeks and charge you for 2 weeks. Well, then if I'm in NCAA, I'm telling Carolina, I'm going to assume Butch Davis called every recruit on your team 40 times illegally. That's what we're going to assume if you can't prove otherwise. And once Carolina tells Butch Davis that, then he'll turn him over. That's, you know. But I believe in playing hardball. And the problem is NCAA doesn't have the guts to play hardball.
That's actually – I kind of like that sort of mantra. Maybe the NCAA as a whole should take that mantra going forward. We're going to assume the worst until you can prove otherwise. I mean, that seems fair to me. And I'm not just talking about Carolina. I'm talking about, you know, Ohio State, Tennessee. Wherever they get their mitts in there. The bigger problem to me is that when you get caught speeding – and you're going 9 over, you know what's going to happen. I mean, you might cut a deal with the DA, but like, you know, your worst case punishment. See, the NCAA has no guidelines for that. You feel like, you know, Carolina could get it worse than USC, or they could get it, like, you know, I mean, you don't know. Am I the only one who feels that way? Surely not.
Well, all I know is that when Jalen Rose gets caught speeding, he's just great. You know, he got the DUI, was going to go to jail, and is going to go to jail. And then, like a week later, was caught speeding. And from everything I read, he was going 25 miles an hour over the speed limit, and the cops cut him a break and gave him a ticket for 9 miles an hour over the speed limit. So all I know is it's too bad he's not our guest right now because he could shed some light on this whole speeding analogy you've got. But the NCAA does not have. I mean, there's a reason they don't have. They don't play hardball. The reason is that they know full well, and this is not a theory or a rumor. This is a fact. They know full well, and this is, I mean, people know this, that the BCS schools, the biggest 60, 70 schools out there, are creeping closer to the day where they're just going to break away from the NCAA, just break away from it, keep all that TV money for themselves, keep all that March Madness money for themselves, and just have their own little miniature subculture of huge schools. And NCAA knows that. And so if they come down hard on Carolina and Ohio State and Tennessee and just, you know, crack down on them like they should, they know that eventually these schools might get ticked off enough that, you know what, we don't need this.
Sure.
We're gonna form our own league and go on. And so the NCAA's kind of got their hands tied. It's even worse than they don't have subpoena power. They can't really catch anybody. Now, even if they do catch somebody, they can't punish them like they should because they know they might just push them out the door.
I will say that I think that Carolina's at least – If you're a Carolina fan, there is something bad to be thought about. The fact that Carolina is not the prominent football school like Ohio State and USC. And I realize USC got hammered, or Oregon or Texas. The NCAA could thrash Carolina's football program and thrash them and ban them for the next 5 years. And Carolina would still have a really good basketball program, top five in the country. And the most of the world would probably go on not caring too much about the fact that Carolina football wasn't relevant anymore.
Yeah, the thing about Carolina fans, and I know you know this from where you live and where you went to school and all that, and I know this because I used to live down there and cover the whole triangle for the Charlotte newspaper, is the Carolina fans, I don't think they're really that concerned with how the nation perceives them. All they're concerned with is we want to beat NC State. And we want we want to throttle Duke, but we want to beat NC State. And if the NCAA hammers Carolina to the point that forget about they can't go to a BCS bowl or they can't qualify for this bowl, that bowl. If the NCAA hammers Carolina to the point where they can't beat NC State consistently, that's a major problem for those people, and I don't blame them.
But they weren't beating NC State. Butch Davis 0-4 against NC State, or at least he's never beaten Tom. He never beat Tom O'Brien.
Well, there you go, and that's no good. And if the NCAA hits them hard and makes it so like this is your lot in life, this will continue now for the next decade.
Yes, they will be upset. They will be very
upset. That will make them so furious. And the NCAA can't just look at itself and say, Carolina's not a big football school. This is one we can hammer. We're not going to hammer Ohio State because they might leave. We can hammer Carolina. They won't care their football. Yeah, that's true. But Carolina will care because they're your number one or two seller for basketball. And you got that $18 billion contract with CBS or whatever. And Carolina's a big factor in March Madness. You don't want to tick off that school for any reason.
No, that's a good point. That's a good point. All right. So do you have any predictions about maybe what the next Carolina coach is? Or actually, that's a silly question because I don't think they get anybody. How rank Tennessee, Ohio State, USC, and Carolina in terms of where you think the level of
scum?
Yes, the level of scum. Who's the scummiest? Who's the least scummiest out of those four?
I think Ohio State was the scummiest, and not necessarily because of the rules they broke. Because the school itself didn't actually break the rules. It was Terrell Pryor and other guys were getting tattoos for money and all this. But when a head coach knows that, and I don't want to hear any of this sob story about, drug dealers were going to kill Terrell Pryor. No, they weren't. Shut up, Jim Tressel. No one believes that. I mean, only diehard Buckeye fans who just don't have any other choice but to believe that, they'll believe that. No one else believes that. So for a head coach to sit back and willingly play studs, not just one, but several studs. Posey, the great running back, a lot of them.
Right.
And then win a Big Ten title and go to the BCS with players that never should have been eligible. That, to me, is worse than whatever cheating happened off campus at other schools. And then I'd say Tennessee is next because Bruce Pearl lied to NCAA about a violation. Photos taken in his own house with the recruit. Bruce, where was this photo taken? I have no idea. That's your living room, Bruce. You know where that photo was taken. That's second. And then I'd put Carolina ahead above Southern Cal. Because Southern Cal had all kinds of crazy stuff, and Reggie Bush was getting money from boosters and all this, or getting rental property. But Butch Davis had a freaking runner for an agent on as his recruiting coordinator. That's pretty bad.
Yeah, it's unprecedented in terms
of... Now, what do you think? The question is, what do you think about Oregon? I realize Southern Cal had a whole lot more going on, but it was off-campus stuff. No one is saying Pete Carroll paid Reggie Bush or did anything like that. People are just saying that boosters were running amok and Southern Cal didn't stop it. Oregon has the accusation that their coaching staff willingly wrote a check for $25,000 to a guy that would provide them nothing other than a great player.
He did quote unquote write up those scouting reports later. It's like stick figures on a piece of notebook paper. He's like, yeah, it's $25,000 scouting reports.
After he was paid. I mean, he got paid 25 grand. Yeah. And then by the way, here's what you paid me in advance for. Who pays in advance for that? So and I got Oregon fans because I wrote about a week ago that now that Butch Davis has been fired, he had to go. Tressel had to go. Bruce Pearl had to go. There's only one more coach out there on the horizon that kind of just has to go. And you know it when you know it. And Chip Kelly's the guy. He has to go. And Oregon fans are acting like I've said the dumbest thing I've ever said, and I've said some dumb stuff. Where do you fall in line on the – if Oregon wrote a check for $25,000 for nothing more than really the access to a player, does Chip Kelly have to go or not?
Yeah, absolutely. If they paid 25 grand for a player, hell yeah. That's like blue chips. I mean, that's the definition. I mean, that's, I don't want to say that's worse than what Carolina did, but I mean, it might be. I mean, that might put them number one. I think the thing that separates Oregon, or I shouldn't say separate. I think the thing that distinguishes Oregon is that because the system that Chip Kelly runs is so funky and the spread offense that he runs, that people feel like that's how they were winning and that maybe they weren't doing it vis-a-vis cheating. Does that make any sense at all?
Oh, well, sure. Well, I don't think anyone thinks that they won for reasons you know, nefarious reasons, because the guy that they're attached to right now, Leish Seastrunk, I mean, he's nobody. He hasn't done anything. I get that he's a great recruit, but he's not the reason they won or almost won the national title last year. So I don't think anybody thinks that they're winning by hook and crook, but I get that Oregon fans are scared, because Oregon, I mean, that is a place that sees itself as a athletic juggernaut. It's not, but Nike wants it to be, and so they've always thought their basketball program should be one and their football program should be one. And they see that Chip Kelly leaves, maybe we go back to being 3-9 every year.
Right.
And so they're freaking out over it, but they're not seeing the reality. The reality is, if you're a fan of Oregon, you can't tolerate having a head coach who either wrote the check himself or approved the check himself or just didn't care enough to know what was going on, just kind of like Butch Davis probably, and just allowed it to happen. If that's your head coach, I'd rather lose with some dignity than win that way.
No, I agree. The thing that, here's the thing that gets me, and you made this point, is that you talk about, like, well, Chip Kelly hadn't necessarily done anything wrong. You know, he had just, you know, all these other great athletes that came up before, you know, Seastrunk or whatever, you know, however you pronounce his name. The thing that gets me is that there's, like, this weird, obscenely high level of plausible deniability for these coaches. It's like, oh, well, you know, Butch has only known John Blake for 40 years. I mean, he coached him in high school, or, you know, he knew him in high school. And yet it's like, but how could he possibly have known that this guy was doing something dirty? And the same thing goes with Jim Tressel. Jim Tressel got in trouble with the NCAA at Youngstown State. It's like, oh, well, oh, God, who would have known that Jim Tressel might do something shady behind closed doors, you know? I mean, he already did it. And we seem to be too forgiving of the past and or obvious things that should be obvious.
Well, the fan bases, and they're the same everywhere. The only thing that changes is the color of the jersey. But fans everywhere are more than willing to really put their brain on a shelf and just not use it. If my coach is being accused of something, no, I'm gonna grab for any life raft I can grab for that says Chip Kelly didn't know. Any life raft I can grab for that says Jim Tressel was just trying to save his players' lives because the drug dealers were going to shoot him down with AK-47s. Any life raft I can find, I'd rather be stupid and pretend that I'm stupid than admit that my coach has to be fired. And that's a whole way of life that I really don't understand. I've never ever liked anything, not even my family, not even my sons. I've never liked anything enough where I would just pretend that I'm a total moron because I believe in these. No. If you're a bad guy, I'm spanking you. I'm sorry. That's just the way it's got to be. And no one in these fan bases, they don't want to spank their coach and start over. Like, have some dignity and think to yourself, we can win with somebody clean. We don't have to win like that.
By the way, I'm definitely going to send you have you heard about the online petition to get Butch Davis back as head coach that Carolina fans started?
That can't be true.
I swear it's true. They started it the day after. So they're like 1,500 names on it. They're probably like a couple thousand names on it, actually. There were like a thousand names on it last week, but it had devolved to the point where it was just like somebody signed up for it. It was like, name, J.J. Redick, Comet, just came by to drop a three on Butch. So it was like, it turned into like just everybody else mocking Carolina fans. But they actually want Butch back. And so I see your point. It's pretty incredulous to think that you could see this stuff going on at your school and you could assume the absolute, you know, best case scenario. To me, I just don't get it.
Well, and then they would laugh at everybody else, though. If that happened at any other campus in America, you would laugh at those fans for assuming the best. But it happens on your campus, and you become that guy that puts his head in the sand. I mean, like the lack of self-awareness, and this is everywhere. This is everywhere. Every fan base, it's the same. And I don't know. That's a part of reality that there's a disconnect there, and that's why it's so aggravating to me is that, and other people too, is that it's so obvious. You know what you're looking at, and yet the people that are inside the hurricane can't see it themselves. Like, what are you thinking?
Yeah, people out there are pretty ridiculous.
Speaking of hurricane, Randy Shannon is the next coach of the Carolina football team.
Is that your prediction?
Yeah, because they're going to do like Oklahoma basketball did, and well done to Oklahoma basketball after having a series of scummy coaching staffs. They went and got Lon Kruger, who is the squeakiest, cleanest coach out there, and well done to Oklahoma. I think North Carolina will kind of have to do the same thing. And Randy Shannon, you know, he went to Miami and didn't win at a level Miami fans want to see him win at, but he went there and nobody got arrested and nobody cheated and everybody graduated, and he is a really impressive guy. And if he can do that in North Carolina and go 8-4 every year, they'll build a monument to him.
Well, that's what Butch was doing. So, yeah, they probably – I think that would be – that hire scares me. People throw out Urban Meyer. I don't think that's happening. But, yeah, Randy Shane's a scary hire if you're not a Carolina fan, because he could win, and he could win without, you know, being dirty, and that changes the landscape dramatically.
Yeah, he's not going to go 11-1, but nobody goes to Carolina and goes 11-1 except for Mac Brown, and he leaves. So
yeah,
you get a guy at Carolina that can win more than he loses every year. You know, every now and then they're going to have the right quarterback, and they're going to go 10-2. Who knows?
Yeah, exactly. All right. Well, this has been a good talk. I feel better about my love for Carolina now. anyway, I can't.
Let's just forget about the whole Randy Moss's 5 years older than Blasco Burris thing. That never happened.
No, that never happened. Anyway, we'll have this up on iTunes soon. We'll be up on iTunes. We urge people to check out the RSS feed, and there should be a subscribe to iTunes button. Go to facebook.com/CBS Sports. And as always, two guys in a podcast.
Signing off.